We'll call the House Committee on Health Care to order for April 13th. And start with making a couple of announcements that are things we know we're carrying over. We will reschedule House Bill 3427 to probably to Friday. Is that right?
I'm sorry, where are you looking? Yes.
Yeah, we're going to reschedule 3427 to Friday. We're going to carry over the work session on House Bill 2021. We'll have a dash for amendment to that, and we need a fiscal on the amendment. Then we'll carry it over to Wednesday. And
You can make that announcement.
And we're going to carry over House Bill 2758 until Wednesday also. There's an amendment coming that we understand makes everybody happy on that. That'd be the dash five amendments. And
that's what we want. Everybody,
if that's the case, I'll be happy too.
It's a nice song.
It's sort of a song. It's called Singing in the Rain.
Happy.
Yeah. We have, we're going to have a couple of public hearings. And they're public hearings and possible work sessions. It turns out that we will open a work session on after the public hearing on 3506, but then carry it over again to Wednesday. We're going to have a lot of business on Wednesday. Carry it over until Wednesday because it's going to need some fiscal. The other two public hearings we have are on 3356 and 3513. We'll open those public hearings and carry over work sessions on both of them. There's some sense that they're similar enough that we might want to get them together before we send them to Ways and Means, rather than having two sort of overlapping ones. And we'll see what happens between now and Wednesday or Friday. So none of the public hearings will we do a work session on those three. We'll just have public hearings. I'm going to ask everybody to be as brief as possible as we go through those. Once you've said whatever you need to say, don't miss any opportunity to stop. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3356. Madam Administrator, what have we got here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3356 requires the Oregon Health Authority to administer a program to provide loans to hospitals for establishing new primary care residency programs. And we have Christopher
somebody.
Right. Yes, I believe so. I can't. SWIDE.
Come on.
Tim Cowan. And Dr. Robin Drabelbus.
Could be the physician's signatures, huh?
We have all three. Eyes are a little dim today, but I only see two.
Is Tim Cowan in the room? Tim Cowan? Okay.
There we go. Now I'll see three. Please introduce yourself when you start your testimony. Any order you want.
All right. For the record, my name is Dr. Christopher Swide. I'm an anesthesiologist at OHSU, and I'm also the Assistant Dean for Graduate Medical Education in OHSU School of Medicine. I'm here to testify on behalf of OHSU to strongly support the state's efforts in addressing Oregon's physician distribution and shortage through incentives to increase physician residency capacity in our state. And I thank everyone for the opportunity to speak with you today. I will be brief, and I know you're short on time, and I will submit my entire testimony in writing for later reference.
Thank you.
As Oregon's only public academic health center, OHSU has been educating physicians for Oregon since 1887. To help address physician work shortages, OHSU has been gradually increasing the size of the medical school class by 7 students a year until they reach their goal of 160. Further, on average, 80% of the medical student body is Oregonian. These future homegrown physicians are inherently inclined to remain in Oregon to practice. And we have a good success at retention. Currently, about half of OHSU's medical school classes end up eventually practicing in Oregon, a retention rate that is among the top 20 in the nation. However, an essential aspect of any solution to Oregon's physician shortage is to increase graduate medical education in state training capacity in Oregon to allow more of Oregon's medical students to remain in the state to pursue the second required phase of their medical training, their internship and residency. Studies show a strong correlation between where a new physician completes GME training and where they end up practicing. Specifically, expanding GME capacity in Oregon to areas where physicians are most needed could have an immediate and ongoing impact on workforce shortages. Yet Oregon's capacity is significantly constrained. OHSU's GME program is the largest in the state, with over 800 training spots in 79 programs that are accredited for both MD and DO graduates. Our national reputation for excellence in the primary care specialties results in a large number of applications each year to these programs. And in 2014, we received over 5,700 applications for the 69 positions that opened up in our primary care GME programs. OHSU currently also has three off-site programs, a family medicine freestanding program in Klamath Falls, as well as two very unique general surgery rotations of several months to a year in each place, one's in Grants Pass and the other in Coos Bay. Our data shows that these programs have had a strong record of retaining physicians in rural areas. The federal government in 1997 froze the number of GME positions it would support for hospitals participating in this type of training at that time. This number is known as the federal cap on residents and trainees, and OHSU is currently well above its cap. OHSU is currently fully funding over 190 positions over the 197 cap at a cost of approximately $19 million a year. However, hospitals that do not have an existing GME training program are eligible to receive federal funding to help support new programs if they're able to achieve accreditation and meet other programmatic requirements and quality standards. New physician residency programs are very challenging to start. The programs require significant upfront investment in program design and faculty recruitment. Equally important, national accreditation standards for GMA are very complex, and meeting them requires educational and clinical expertise and experience to ensure that new programs demonstrate the needed breadth, depth, and quality of training opportunities for physicians. Of note, the accreditation standards nationwide are currently undergoing an evolution related to shifts in healthcare due to reform, as are other aspects of physicians' training. OHSU supports the state's efforts to provide incentive funds for hospitals and other training sites throughout the state to create new intern and residency programs in primary care specialties. OHSU stands ready to work with potential new programs to position them in the state for success on this issue. As the state's largest provider of GME with over 79 accredited programs, we are eager to bring our longstanding expertise and experience to partner with entities across the state to help address program design and achieve the necessary program accreditation. Our collective goal must be to provide the highest quality training opportunities for Oregon's future physicians in ways that supports Oregon's physician workforce goals. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Chair Greenlich and members of the committee, my name is Dr. Robin Drybelbus, and I'm a family physician. I'm assistant professor of family medicine at the College of Osteopathic Medicine of the Pacific Northwest, the other medical school in the state of Oregon. We are graduating our first class this year. We've not been around quite as long as OHSU, but we hope to be in the future.
We have a ways to go.
Indeed we do. But we are ready. I will not restate what has already been said. I wholly support every word that was said, from the fact that the state of Oregon stands ready to meet the need of graduate medical education, but we're faced with a barrier. That barrier exists from the 1997 Balanced Budget Act that stated there is a cap on residency slots that would be funded by Medicare. But the medical schools, through the AAMC, the American Association of Medical Colleges, in 2006 saw something a little bit different, and that was the aging population and the those who would age into Medicare and then need our services. And those services are to be met with, in large part, primary care physicians. So medical schools at that time said we should increase our numbers of graduates from medical schools from 2002 numbers over the next 15 years by 30%. And we're actually set to hit that number a couple of years early. So this year we're going to hit that number of 30% increase over 2002 numbers. But with the increase in medical school graduates, we don't have an increase in residency training slots. And so you can imagine if we have one line going up and one line staying stable, those two lines are going to eventually cross, and we've actually reached that crossing point. That is why we are in this situation where we're in dire need of training more residents. And so this was in large part viewed on both a national and a state level from the state of Oregon back in 2013 when the Oregon Health Policy Board gave a charge to the Oregon Healthcare Workforce Committee, on which I sit. And they said, though there were many charges and topics of focus, one of them was increasing the number of graduate medical education training slots in the state of Oregon. And there was much work done around that exact thing. At the end of 2013, beginning of 2014, we came together as a group, both represented at OHSU, Comp Northwest, and every training site in the state of Oregon that trained family medicine physicians in residency slots, as well as those who had the potential to train them. So interested communities and hospital systems, all of those stakeholders came to the table, and we developed something called the Oregon Primary Care GME Consortium that is in existence today. From that work that was done, we as a state have not sat idle. We have moved this ball forward with the intent of starting graduate medical education. And so that is now partially resourced. But what was already said was that one of the large barriers to beginning medical education is not just the faculty development and the recruitment piece. It's the cost to start novel programs. Because after the Balanced Budget Act of 1997, though existing programs could not add new funded slots, what could happen is that novel programs could begin new slots, but that creates the barrier of infrastructure development. That is why House Bill 3356 is so very important, and that Comp Northwest has worked very closely with Representative Lively's office to develop this and write this language for 3356.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I like the testimony. I'm just going to provide. My name is Tim Callan. I'll provide it in writing.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Are there any questions? Thank you very much. Representative Lively, you want to talk about the Dash 3 amendment?
Yes, thank you. Sorry I didn't speak to that earlier, Mr. Chair. But so when this process started, there were several bills, several of which I introduced, another one that Representative Buehler introduced regarding this issue. And the chair had requested that we get together and talk. And so we met with a large group of stakeholders to talk about this thing in general. And out of that came an effort with Representative Buehler and myself to use this bill and the Dash 3 amendments. And essentially what the bill as I originally introduced it dealt just with cost, hospital costs to make investments up front to be ready for residency. What Representative Buehler's bill did took it a step further and helped offset some of those ongoing costs that hospitals have to do that. So we combined the bills, and so now with the Dash 3 amendments, this bill both addresses trying to get some funds to help hospitals make the upfront costs that are required to get them certified and ready to go, and then also some of the ongoing costs that they would face with the number of students that would be there, and that's what the Dash 3 amendments do.
Well, what I would propose doing, we were all talking about this other bill as possibility. Why don't we go into work session and adopt the Dash 3 amendments, and that can be the talking point. Then
yeah.
We can talk about maybe this can be the vehicle if we use whatever is missing from the other bill into this, and maybe we can find it that way.
Does that
make sense to you?
Yeah, it's fine with me.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, I think that's a great idea. That's what we've been doing this whole session, is taking three or four bills and sitting down over dinner and trying to, you know, take the best parts out of each of them. And so I'm more than willing to continue that process. Well, we're getting good at it. Plus, I get to share dinner with Representative Lively. So it's good.
Is that a plus?
Or? Yes. Yeah. As long as he buys.
Which side?
Close the public hearing on House Bill 3356 and open up a work session on House Bill 3356.
Mr. Chair, would you like a motion?
I would love one.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we adopt the -3 amendment dated April 10, 2015 for House Bill 3356.
Representative Nose moves we adopt the -3 amendment dated 4/10/15 to House Bill 3356. Is there any discussion on that amendment? Is there any objection to that amendment? So moved. I'm going to carry over the work session on House Bill 3356 to Wednesday. We'll have a better handle on whether there'll be some change in it at that point, and if not, we'll. If they have a little more time, we'll hold it over till Friday. The work session on 3356 is closed. Let's go right to the other one while we're at it and open a work session on House Bill 3513. Administrator, what have we got here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3513 creates the Rural Medicaid Access and Development Act to provide financial support to rural hospitals and health care providers and to establish primary care residency programs. The chief sponsor is Representative Hayden, and we have Andy Easton signed up for testimony if you'd like to come, counsel.
Representative Hayden, you want to start us while Ms. Easton comes forward?
Chair and Greenlink, my name is Representative Hayden, Cedric Hayden. I'm from House District 7. Today I want to present to you a concept to stabilize our rural health care. I'll try and be brief with this. Our rural health care is dependent upon the hospitals. There are 32 hospitals in the state of Oregon that are considered either A, B, or C hospitals, and some of those work together to create a referral center for specialty needs. When we look at the rural hospital as a whole, as far as the critical access for our communities, of those 32, and these are not the large hospitals that are included with the provider tax. This discussion came out of a provider tax discussions that I was part of, and a concern that the small hospitals don't have a safety net. Currently, 17 of our 32 small hospitals are operating in negative margins. They're currently operating at a loss. 26 of the 32 hospitals are operating with less than a 5% buffer. So they're very, very fragile. When we look at, and some of this information is in your materials, when we look at the fragility of the hospital system in there, it became apparent that we need to provide some stabilization, and that stabilization does have an opportunity to be federally matched through CMS. We can't guarantee it until we actually do the program, but what this bill is about is stabilizing the rural hospitals that are the safety network for all Oregonians. If you travel and you get into trouble or you get stuck on Cabbage Hill, like when that bus accident happened some years ago, three or four rural hospitals had to come together, and they saved lives. And so it's very important that we have those out there. I won't take much more of your time, but the bill is about stabilizing rural hospitals. It does have a couple of spinoffs. If we can get CMS funding to also actually increase facilities for residencies, the goal would be 25 slots. If we can get CMS, because all of these services are geared towards Medicaid service, which has the opportunity for a CMS match. Thank you.
If it turns out that there are pieces that need to be separated, we can still send two bills forward, but I think we don't really want competing bills, so maybe take a piece out of your bill, strip it down, put it in the other bill, but see what we can do.
Okay.
And yeah, hope you'll work with him on that as well.
Happy to.
Congress.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Comment, yeah. And maybe just question. Representative Greenlink, I do think that there's a lot more to Representative Hayden's bill than just the residency part. It's, you know, that's a part of a bigger whole. So yeah. We'll work on the best way of try to mesh those.
Yeah, or send them both in the current form, let them work it out in Ways and Means.
Okay.
Chair Greenlink and members of the committee, Andy Easton, the Associate Vice President of Government Relations for the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. And I'll keep my remarks brief. Representative Hayden did a nice job in summarizing the where rural hospitals are financially and the need for some assistance because of their unstable financial status. He also talked about the need for them to stay alive and open and operating in cases of emergencies. But I want to talk about a little bit why they are unstable. Some of their instability is because of the speed of transformation. We have seen one rural hospital. You've seen one rural hospital. None of them are equal in the way that they conduct their businesses or in the populations they serve. Electronic health records, that was a huge increase in cost to some of our members, and they don't have all the capital expenses or requirements to make sure they are fully in and up to speed. There's also variability in their relationships with their CCOs, and that goes back to when you see one rural hospital, you've seen one rural hospital. Some of them have great working relationships with them and have some very unique contracts on how they are to have payment methodologies, and so that is a unique situation there too. But I think it's important to remember that our rural hospitals serve as a hub for all health care, and not just the acute care, but they also need to be fully funded adequately because of their role as a hub for health care. Any solution that is looking at helping these rural hospitals, there are four key elements that we believe need to be included. They have to help our rural hospitals move forward with transformation. They have to be appreciative of the dynamics in a rural environment. They should be comprehensive in their approach and not just looking at the financial element of assistance. And they need to allow time and potentially additional resources. And so we are considering all the different elements in Representative Hayden's bill. They are very unique, and we will have a full appreciation and a full comments to him hopefully by the end of the week.
Thank you. Is anybody else that wants to testify on 3513? Okay. Are there any other questions in this panel? Thank you very much. Wait a minute, Andy, I have a question. Did you say that you haven't reached a conclusion on this bill at this time? Is that right?
That is correct, Chair. We are taking this bill through our public policy process, and we have not had a chance to sit down with our rural folks in general to talk about the bill.
When will you have a chance to do that?
We are hoping to have that completed by the end of the week.
That's soon enough to be useful.
We will make that. We'll expedite it then.
Okay.
Message received.
I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3513. Open a work session on House Bill 3513. Carry the work session over till Wednesday. Close the work session on 3513. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3506. Madam Administrator, what have we got?
...3506 directs the health authority to adopt rules establishing criteria relating to specified period of time to obtain dentures, to allow partial dentures to be replaced at least once every 5 years, and to have a tooth extraction without having an acute infection or abscess.
Okay.
I would like to defer to my colleague to introduce it from up here.
Okay.
Let's call a panel.
Well, Rep. Hayden is going to speak from the dais.
Can you speak from here?
Okay. Is that okay?
That's wonderful.
Chair Greenlink. So I'll just do a quick preamble. Chair Greenlink, members of the committee, my name is Cedric Hayden. I sit on the Health Care Committee. Tough to figure out. So this this particular dental bill is brought to us by Kenny Geyer and cooperation of the DCOs, which provide dental services through the CCOs, the dental care organizations and the coordinated care organizations. And there has been some rule-making change requests, and they are fairly simple. One is on dentures. A client now under the Oregon Health Authority literally has to keep a tooth that could be abscessed in their mouth within 6 months of qualifying for a denture. The DCOs would like that rule removed that says people that qualify get one denture in a lifetime, whether or not they had a tooth within 6 months. I think that makes sense. Partial dentures are something that we provide to fill in spaces between teeth that attach to other teeth. Those other teeth can be lost, and so there's a request to move that from a 10-year requirement to a 5-year requirement. And dental extractions, third molar extractions are a common thing, particularly in young adults in our practices. There's a requirement to have pain with pathology. There's a request, not 100% of the DCOs are in agreement with this, but there is a request to have the pathology requirement removed. And so that pain, if somebody's having pain with it, they would qualify for the extraction. All of these are additional services to the client, my understanding, without a request for additional funds. But I think we have some people in the industry here to testify. Thank you.
Good call. The only witness, please.
Mike Shercliffe, please.
I have not heard CCOs objecting to this. Have you?
I heard...
I've heard objecting to another bill, but not to this
one. No, I had one CCO have concerns. I wouldn't call it an objection to the third molar extractions because they were afraid that it might increase the amount of extractions.
Representative Shercliffe.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dr. Mike Shercliffe. I'm a dentist and the president of Vanning's Dental.
You're also not a representative.
No, I'm not.
You're a doctor, I know.
Yes. Yes.
Excuse me.
Yeah, I am a doctor. I'm here to testify in favor of this bill. I want to thank Kenny Geyer and Dr. Hayden, Representative Kinnemer, and Representative Widener, who's not here, for their support of this bill, as well as folks on the other side of the aisle. There's some things that I'd like to explain about the bill. First of all, you say, well, how did we ever get a rule that says that you can't have a denture if it's not started within 6 months of the last tooth extraction? And if you remember, I mean, you all remember the times we've had in the past where the resources are always short, as they are today, is the bad teeth are better than no teeth at all. And so people are hanging onto their teeth and not getting them out because they couldn't get a denture. And so the rule came, if you started within 6 months, you could have your denture. I know it sounds silly, but very frankly, people were ending up in the hospital and the costs were much greater. And so in an attempt to not cover all dentures, but those dentures that were necessary, this rule got promulgated. And with the advent of the 350,000+ Medicaid expansion folks who are adults, the amount of complexity and the appeals and the administrative hearings and all the things that are going with it, plus the fact that people can't understand how they're on the Oregon Health Plan now that they can't get their teeth when they need them, I just feel that we need to change the rule. Secondly, when it comes to partials, the problem we have now is a lot of people. The way that what the rule states is that if you get a partial, and you lose that partial, you can't have a denture for 10 years, or however many years are left on it. And a lot of people are having partials that fail because teeth fail, and then they can't get their dentures. And so if you change that to 5 years, then it makes it fits within a time frame better. The last one is third molars. Is it you have folks that come in that have children that have third molars erupting, they're in pain, they don't have a cavity in the tooth, they don't have an abscess, or they don't have some kind of pathology, but they have excruciating pain, and the way the rules are currently written, it's pretty hard to explain, especially when other people with other insurance can get their third molars out. And so it's causing a lot of confusion, a lot of heartache, and a lot of administrative issues. So I would urge you for your support for this legislation.
Are there any questions of Dr. Shercliffe? Thank you very much. Anybody else want to testify in this bill? I will.
I have a question about 2020.
Close the public hearing. Open the work session on House Bill 3506. We need the fiscal on this, which we don't have, so we will carry over 3506 until Wednesday. I'm going to open up some work sessions now. I'd really like the opportunity to hear discussion if there are problems on the bill. I'd really like to hear what you think about them as we go forward. But we're going to start with House Bill 2024. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, House Bill 2024, which apparently needs a dash one amendment. And other than that, we're ready to move it if we so desire. What do we have with 2024, Madam Administrator?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2024 had a public hearing on the 20th. This, you'll recall, was Representative Kenny Geyer, chief sponsor, and Representative Gallegos, chief sponsor bill. We have a dash one amendment which replaces the original bill, and the dash one amendment directs the health authority, in consultation with the CCOs and the DCOs, coordinated care organizations and dental care organizations, to adopt rules and procedures relating to training and certification of health workers to provide basic preventive dental services to underserved children. It also specifies the required topics to be considered for certification and the responsibilities of the health worker. Also directs the health authority to reimburse the cost of the preventative dental services that are provided. It sets July 1, 2016 as the operative date, and the bill in its entirety has an emergency clause effective on passage. You do have a fiscal impact statement on OLIS that gives an analysis of the amendment and also specifies that at this time the fiscal impact is indeterminate and there is no revenue impact on the bill, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kenny Geyer, would you like to talk about that amendment?
Sure. So we had a great discussion with a number of different dental providers and stakeholders after the first public hearing. And Dr. Bruce Austin, I saw in the audience here at one point. He just stepped out a little bit. But I think if there are any questions about this, I just mentioned you. If we want to call him up to the stand, he might be able to answer some things. But basically the idea is that in some areas of the state, there are workforce shortages, and we're trying to figure out, based on the statewide strategic plan, how to better use traditional healthcare workers to link people to dental hygienists and dentists when needed, to provide community education, to provide some very basic community health preventative services, which might include just teeth brushing, flossing, might possibly include the application of fluoride varnish, but anything that would be included would have both training and certification overseen by OHA in coordination with the Board of Dentistry and OHA. Well, when we say OHA, we mean the Oral Health Division of OHA, which has its new director, Dr. Austin. So I think there was very wide agreement on the direction that this was going, that we're opening up a workforce, but we're making sure that we're coordinating it at the levels where it needs to have coordination, and that there will be the appropriate supervision of any traditional healthcare workers.
Hayden, do you have a comment?
Yes, Chair Greenlake. I think that there is a solution to be had here to increase some access. Some of the people involved with the dental services side had some concerns that were voiced about how that was developed and if it would be developed outside of kind of the dental realm. But I think now that we have a dental director, he'll do a good job at keeping that within everybody's comfort level. So I think there's a solution there.
Are there any other comments on this?
Do you want to bring the dental director up? He didn't have a chance
to.
Okay.
We have a motion on it?
I'll make a motion, Mr. Chair.
Go for it.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move to adopt the dash one amendment to House Bill 2024, dated April 8, 2015.
Representative Nose moves to adopt the dash one amendment, dated April 8, 2015, to House Bill 2024. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection? We have the dash one added to House Bill 2024. Do we have another motion?
Sure, why not?
Why not?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move House Bill 2024 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nose moves that we move House Bill 2024 to the floor with as amended with the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Can you call the roll, please?
Representative Bueller?
Yes.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Kenimer?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Absent.
Vice Chair Hayden?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nose?
Aye.
Chair Greenlee?
Aye. Motion carries. Kenny Geyer, would you like to?
I would love to. Thank you.
Close the work session on House Bill 2024. And open a work session on House Bill 2638. What do we have there?
Mr. Chair, House. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2638 had a public hearing on March the 2nd. This is chief sponsor, Representative Lively and Representative Greenlick. This bill expands the use of the Oregon Prescription Drug Program to include medical assistant recipients and coordinated care organization. It allows the Oregon Health Authority to deny reimbursement of Legend Drugs until 6 months after the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's approval. Mr. Chair, we don't have an amendment on this bill. We have a no revenue. There is a fiscal statement on OLAs that provides further analysis of the bill, but also specifies that at this time, the bill is indeterminate as far as any impact. And they're also noting that any savings at this time, it's unable to be quantified.
Is there, let's have a motion on the bill, please.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I would like to move House Bill 2638 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nose moves House Bill 2638 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. The Lively, you?
Nope. Comment? I still think it's a good vote.
I do want to recognize that we heard testimony from the pharmaceutical industry that about the arcane possibility that this might create something like a buyer's monopoly. I recognize that in the record. I think it's an unlikely possibility, although I'm not a lawyer, nor have I ever played one on television. but we hear from RLC that it's probably not a problem. Any other discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Bueller?
Yes.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Kenimer?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Absent.
Vice Chair Hayden?
Aye.
Vice Chair Noe?
Aye.
Chair Greenlee?
Aye. The motion carries. Representative Lively, would you like to carry this one?
Thank you very much. I would.
Close the work session on House Bill 2638. And open a work session on House Bill 2934. Madam Administrator, what have we got here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2934 had a public hearing on March the 6th. This was introduced as an interim House health care committee bill. It requires the Oregon Health Authority to submit a blueprint for the basic health plan or program to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services by December 31, 2015. What you have before you is the Dash 1 amendment that modifies the direction to the OHA to convene a stakeholder work group. It specifies the work group membership, when the first meeting shall occur, and to develop recommendations to be reported to the Interim Health Care Committee no later than December 1, 2015. There's a minimal impact on the Dash 1 amendment and a no revenue impact, Mr. Chair.
I have an amendment, please. I mean, a motion on the amendment, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2934, dated April 2nd, 2015.
Representative Nose moves the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2934, dated 4215. Is there any discussion on the?
I have a comment. on it.
Comment.
I will vote for this amendment reluctantly because I'm delighted to see the work continue, but I am sorry that we're not attaching a price. I think that it's time for us to actually put the funding into a real study. I think when you look at how much money we'd spend on a study and how much we might save and also how many more people we could serve, I'm very saddened that we're not able to do that at this time, but I'm delighted that the work will continue, and I hope we will bring this back next year.
I think that's an important point. I'm satisfied with the amendment because we did hear from OHA that there needed to be a lot of policy decisions that we needed to make before we had an assignment to do the blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
The hope is that this this process will get us the questions we need to answer as we hand in that assignment, which will then, I think, create the development of a real blueprint. There's such issues as whether when we use the federal IT process, mm-hmm. we can actually do the basic health plan. But that's the sort of thing that we hope this mm-hmm. this process will get us. So. Any other questions on the discussion on the amendment?
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I could, I'd like to have a brief recess to discuss something with you, please.
Let's stand at ease.
Do you know how to make that motion?
I'm going to try.
We're back in order. Call back to order. Let's see if we can make a motion. Oh, are we in a work session?
Well, we are in a work session on 2934. You have.
Let's finish the work session.
I'll just explain. You have a motion on the table for the Dash 1 amendments. And good. So we were right about to finish that.
Let's finish this. Is there any objection to the Dash 1 amendments? They're included. Can I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that we move to the floor House Bill 2934 as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nose moves that we move House Bill 2934 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended with the dash amendments. Is there any discussion on the motion? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Buehler?
No.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Kenimer?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Leslie?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Excused.
Vice Chair Hayden?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nose?
Aye.
Chair Greenlight?
Aye. Motion carries. Who would like to carry it on the floor?
I'll carry it.
Okay. Kenny Geyer will carry it. Close the work session on House Bill 2934. And do you want to try that motion?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we suspend the rules of the committee for the purposes of allowing us to change Representative Widener's status from absent to excused.
And how many votes have we had so far?
Two. This one and the previous one.
Bill. Right.
Two.
For you could repeat, it was for House Bill 2024 and House Bill 2638.
House Bill 2638. Is there any discussion?
Yes. No, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, thank you for this possible courtesy here, or for the courtesy of doing this. Hopefully we'll see how the outcome is. Was surprised to find out that Representative Widener had not apparently applied for an excuse from absence here, although he applied with the clerk's office. And apparently Sandy verified what I guess I wasn't entirely sure about. We're supposed to have done both places. And
here is the most important one.
I guess that depends on whose view you're looking at, which is most important. But anyhow, usually as a courtesy, unless there's some other reason, we mark him as excused. And I was hoping that because I know he is out of town on business.
That's great. Hearing no objection.
Whoops.
Oh. So moved. Please change his vote. Please change my status. I didn't hear that objection.
It was visual.
open up a work session on House Bill 2972.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2972, sponsored by Representative Hayden, Kenny Geyer, and Representative Parrish, had a public hearing on March 20th. You'll recall that this bill defines dental screening, recommends that the State Board of Education, in consultation with the Oregon Health Authority, adopt rules to take any action requiring each education provider obtain a certificate that students 7 years of age or younger has had a dental screening prior to beginning school. We have a Dash 1 amendment before us that specifies that the Department of Education will work in consultation with the Oregon Board of Dentistry in developing and adopting guidelines for the screening, modifies the exemptions to the screening requirement, includes the Board of Dentistry for developing standards and rules for implementing the dental screening process. You have a fiscal impact statement on OLIS. At this time, the Department of Education estimates that the fiscal impact for the biennium 2015-17 is $16,941.
And I think we don't need a Ways and Means on this, is that right?
It has not been so stated, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Can I have a motion on the dash ones?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like
You're doing all the work today.
He's got a couple.
It just worked out that way. you made me lose my train of thought. Now I got to start all over again.
It is
Chair,
dash ones.
I'd like to move that we adopt the dash one amendment dated April 2nd, 2015 for House Bill 2934.
Representative Nose moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 29 dated 4215. It said 42, did it say?
2972.
I'm sorry, it's 48. I looked at the wrong number.
4815. The House Bill 2972. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Is there any discussion on the amendment? Kenner, you need a moment?
No. Just shut up.
Okay.
Thank you, Phil.
For the record, I would just like to say that Representative Hayden and I, this was another bill that was discussed with a lot of the oral health stakeholders, again, with Dr. Bruce Austin, our new state dental director, and a lot of the thrust of it was basically to ensure that we had coordination between the Oregon Health Authority, Oral Health Division, and the Board of Dentistry as we go forward with the Department of Education and the basic premise of the bill is that we should be doing oral screening like we do vision screening and hearing screening in the schools. It's really to bring that in alignment. The main other thing that the amendment does is to make sure that there's nothing interpreted as punitive. There was permissive language in the bill that said schools may withhold grades. They cannot let kids not go to school, but they can do things like withhold grades. I think we adopted that language either from the vision and hearing or from California or something, but no one ever intended for schools to do that anyway. So because that caused concern, we just took that out. We also added that if, in addition to a religious exemption, if parents wanted to state that there was a burden in getting a screening, that information would actually be helpful to us to know where the gaps are in terms of screening, dental screening around the state.
I think there's a general feeling that a child with a lot of dental pain isn't going to do very well in school.
Exactly.
Makes it pretty hard to concentrate.
And one of the primary causes for absenteeism, so it's a really important issue that we get on top of.
Representative Hayden, do you have a comment?
So the bill is pretty straightforward, in my opinion. We did work to make some adjustments on it, but basically here what the bill does. When you start school, you have a visit with your physician. You get your ears checked, you get your eyes checked so that you can learn. It basically says you will now have the opportunity to get your teeth checked. It is important to note that a dental screening is not a dental exam. They still need to have a dental exam, but this is to try and raise the level of education on oral health. Oral dental caries are preventable, and we want to start preventing them.
Great. Did we vote on the amendment?
Not yet.
Not yet,
Chair.
Is there any objection to the amendment? The actual amendments are part of 2972. Can I have a motion on the bill, please?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that we adopt House Bill 2972 as amended and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Noce moves that we move House Bill 2972 as amended with the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Please call the roll.
Representative Bueller?
Yes.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Kennemer?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Excuse.
Vice Chair Hayden?
Aye.
Vice Chair Noce?
Aye.
Chair Greenlight?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Hayden, will you carry this one?
I will, and Kenny Geyer would co-carry with me if that's okay.
If you run into trouble, call on her at any time. Close the work session on House Bill 2972, was that?
2972.
2972. Open the work session on House Bill 3139. What do we have there, Madam Administrator?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3139 also had a public hearing on March 20th. This, too, was a Representative Hayden bill. The original bill required local governments to allow mobile medical clinics to be located on private property. The Dash 3 amendment basically modifies it to specify that the health professional has to be licensed by the appropriate licensing board, defines what a mobile medical clinic, and establishes and bans local government from prohibiting a nonprofit mobile medical clinic from being located and staying in one location for 180 days or less on the private property as long as they have permission of the owner of that private property. No revenue impact, and there's a minimal fiscal impact, Mr. Chair.
And is we need to rescind the Ways and Means on this one?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
And we have prior permission for that.
Okay. Can we have a motion on the amendment, please? Mm-hmm.
Chair Greenlick, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 4-1-15.
Representative Hayden moves to adopt the Dash 1 the Dash 3 amendments dated 4-1-15 into House Bill 3139. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection? Dash 3s are part of 3139. Representative Hayden, do you have a motion on the bill?
Chair Greenlick, I move House Bill 3139 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means to be rescinded.
Representative Hayden moves that we adopt the Dash 1, the 3139, HB 3139, as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that that we rescind the requirement to move the bill to Ways and Means, I think.
Yes.
You got it.
Is there discussion on the motion?
Just to clarify.
Yes, sir.
Chair Greenlick. So this is a fairly simple bill that got pretty complicated. What this does is allow nonprofit organizations to go into communities and provide dental services without having to be on wheels.
Oh, yeah.
These are mobile units that can actually sit on the ground and stay like an RV. When they take the wheels off an RV that stays in an RV location for a long time, they put a skirt around it and they take the wheels off. This is the same kind of concept that we want to be able to have nonprofit organizations. This is not tax dollars. These are charity dollars, and this bill will create an environment where the municipalities will be encouraged to use their variances under their coding systems to come up with an avenue for this to work.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Bueller?
Yes.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Kennemer?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Representative
Weidman? Excused.
Vice Chair Hayden?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Noce?
Aye.
Chair Greenlight?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Hayden, would you like to carry this one?
Sure.
Close the work session on House Bill 3139. And I think, I want to review, but I think our business is done, right? 3427 is rescheduled for Friday. And Madam Administrator, will you follow along with me? I think these are the bills we've carried forward or rescheduled. That would be 2021, 2736.
Can I repeat when we've carried them over to? 2021 to Wednesday, 4:15.
Okay. That's the date, not the time, right? 2736.
I'm sorry?
2736.
2758.
Cross through
it. 2758 to Wednesday, April 15th is what I have.
Was there anything on the
up here?
The number I get, was that just a wrong number?
That was just a wrong
number. That's a wrong number.
Okay. 3427.
Carried over to Friday.
Yeah, that's carried over to Friday.
3356.
To Wednesday, work session only to Wednesday, April 15th.
3506.
Work session only to Wednesday, April 15th.
3513.
Wednesday. Also Wednesday.
Is there anything I missed?
It's work session only to the 15th.
We're going to be busy on Wednesday.
Yes, we are.
Which reminds me, if everybody would come on time and plan on staying, we have a ton of work. Do we have any public hearings on Wednesday?
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair. We have three public hearing possible work sessions.
Oh, my gosh.
So you've got, mm-hmm. 45 minutes right now.
Right.
Look
Wouldn't
at that.
You like that?
We're 45 minutes early.
That's what he just said. We've got 45 minutes right now.
Let's take up all those bills from Wednesday.
I think that's a good idea.
Can we do that?
We are.
Okay, sorry, there's one other thing.
We'd move them quicker, probably.
And that's part of the...
Yeah.
We'd move them quicker, probably.
And that's part of the...
Yeah.